90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City, Community Radio. Streaming online at www.kkfi.org.
The views and opinions of this program are those of its host and guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of 90.1 FM, KKFI, Midcoast Radio Project, or its staff and volunteers.
Hello and good morning. Welcome to Cowtown Conversations. I'm your host, Joseph Jackson. Today we are honored to have Kansas City's top doctor, Dr. Rex Archer, with us for the full hour. And we're going to discuss again misinformation and untruths about the coronavirus, but also we're going to bring up the new mask mandate. So, Dr. Archer, are you with us this morning, sir?
Well, good morning, Joseph. Yes, I'm looking forward to our conversation.
Can you tell listeners, how long have you been Kansas City's top over the health department, the director of the Kansas City Health Department, sir?
Well, I came back to Kansas City 23 years. I had been a local health officer in Maryland and served some in Michigan and worked in Ford Motor Company, but was raised here in the Kansas City area and went to medical school here at KU.
So you're local, born and bred.
I was actually born in Oklahoma City, but they kicked me out after a month.
Dr. Archer, what has been the one aspect of your job that you've enjoyed serving as director of the Kansas City, Missouri Health Department?
I think the opportunity to work with so many fine people and organizations and to call out the issues of racism, all the isms, and the ways that we have structural systems that make it hard for people to be as healthy as they could be. That's been... I remember when I first came back here in the first year, we were seeing the data that HIV/AIDS was moving into our black and brown populations at alarming rates. And I actually declared an emergency that first year that I was here and was actually joined by Dr. Fields, the health director over in St. Louis, that was also seeing the same thing. That led us to then looking at all of our data, and we actually issued a minority health status report. We may have been the first jurisdiction or that I can think of a city health department that issued such a report, where we had huge differences in inequities and injustices based on minority status. And that alarm got Mayor Barnes at the time and Mayor Pro Tem Alvin Brooks to support us in eventually creating a health commission that we still have today. In fact, they're going to be in a business session today presenting the business community health improvement plan, and it's focusing much on racism and how that plays out and impacts health.
And that's kind of how I first met Dr. Archer, was I was at a lot of the CHIP meetings giving my input, because what people don't understand, folks, where you live in Kansas City determines how long you live in Kansas City. There is a disparity. If you live in the Northland, the average age is about 82. You bring down to the third and fifth district, you only live anywhere between 65 and 70 years. And what we're trying to do is close that gap. And I was going to say this, without the hard work that Dr. Archer put into that, the work that is being done now would not have come about, because he does more than just talk about it. He puts the words to it and backs those things and says that conversations he has those conversations that people may not want to have, but people need to have. And that is one thing that I'll always remember about being in the meetings that, you know, you'd always say, you know, just be honest and speak up. I'm like, you sure you want me to do that? Because what I may say may not be what some people want to hear. But no, it was never any problem with that. So we're still fighting this pandemic, sir. And now the Center for Disease Control has come out with new guidance on wearing a mask for those who are vaccinated. Can you explain this new mandate that's kind of like written in jello a little bit?
So there are some unique things to our federal, state, local governmental system in this country where the CDC, with extremely rare exceptions, can't actually mandate anything. They can put out guidance and advice and suggestions. Mandates are really delegated to states and locals, depending on the state-local structure in that state. So the reason that they pivoted some on the mask mandate is that the data has just continued to grow and grow and grow, that folks that are fully immunized have about as close to a zero risk of death from COVID right now, and darn close to that same zero risk of even hospitalization. Yes, there are occasionally folks that are fully vaccinated because they have other kinds of immune issues and challenges that they don't get the full protection from the vaccine. But even some of the variants that are circulating right now, the vaccines are effective at preventing death and hospitalizations. There are some of the variants, and one that we're seeing more frequently here in Kansas City, the Brazilian or P1 variant, that does seem to be causing more mild to really asymptomatic infection. And that's one of the reasons why we, for years, or not years, but for months, we've encouraged people, even if they were fully vaccinated, to still wear the mask, because you can transmit to somebody else. So if you have somebody living in your household who has had a transplant or is on chemotherapy or high doses of steroids or various things that can impair the body's ability to mount an immune response to vaccine, you still may need to be wearing your mask around those folks. I think the signal that the CDC was sending is folks get vaccinated. This is kind of a personal responsibility. And there is a point where, you know, I don't have a problem with restricting individual behavior to protecting others, non-smoking laws as an example in public places, but to continue to restrict people who have done the right thing, who have decided to get vaccinated, that they then still have to wear masks, when others haven't got vaccinated, and that's really the main reason for wearing a mask now. I think that's the issue that's kind of challenging. And then the enforcement thing becomes a real challenge. Do we require people to carry their card with them, like a passport or a driver's license, to where they can be stopped and checked on their status on whether they're wearing a mask or not? And I think we finally decided that it really is their responsibility to protect themselves by wearing a mask or getting vaccinated.
And I will say that, having been full open disclosure, I had COVID last year during Thanksgiving holiday, but also I've had both my shots. I had the first one in February, the second one in March. The first thing that I did after I got the second shot, and she was like, look at him, I took a picture of my card, because I keep the card at home, but I have the picture electronically in my phone so I can produce that at any time if should anybody ask. And I was at Quick Trip yesterday. Anybody knows me knows I love a Quick Trip. I leave the state. I hate leaving because I can't get something at a Quick Trip. And the lady walked in, and some people had masks on, some people didn't. And I just went up to her and I said, you know, what is your all's mask policy? And she said, well, you know, if the mayor requires us to have a policy, we have, but with the CDC guidance, and then they don't, And they said, you know, we're not enforcement, you know, making everybody prove to us, as you said, that they have had the vaccination becomes personal responsibility. And part of the thing of wearing a mask, correct me if I'm wrong, was that I wear the mask to protect you. You wear the mask to protect me. Correct, Dr. Archer?
Yes, that's true. But the advantage is that if you and I are both vaccinated, then neither of us need to wear masks in front of each other because, yes, there is a slight chance that we could have a asymptomatic infection. But if we pass it to the other person, they're not going to be seriously ill. And we've not required masks before COVID for most flu seasons or other kinds of colds and stuff. And so when both parties have been vaccinated, the risk of hospitalization and death aren't really different than mild influenza in a particular year. So I think that's the hard part here, is recognizing you can still pass the disease, but if you're only passing it to people that are vaccinated, there's not likely to be a bad outcome. But people that haven't been vaccinated need to get vaccinated. Part of the reason that we've held on longer with the mask order here in Kansas City is we wanted to make sure that folks really had the chance to get vaccinated. There's really nobody or very, very few left in Kansas City, Missouri, that really haven't had a chance to get vaccinated that are over 18, and most that are over 16 have had a chance. Now we've got the 12 to 16-year-olds that are eligible, and we're starting to see an uptake in vaccinations there. In fact, when we look at the rates of disease, the highest cohort are now the 10 to 19-year-olds that are becoming infected with this disease. So we really need to get parents to help get kids out to get vaccinated, because obviously the 12 to 15-year-olds can't drive, and parents or friends or older brothers or sisters are going to need to get them to a place where they can get vaccinated. And we're actually trying to work with the schools to find ways to vaccinate those kids at school, either summer school or when school kicks off this fall.
I'm going to bookmark there. I'm going to come back to that in a second. The one thing I have to congratulate you all, sir, on is you all have made it easy to get a vaccine. For those that made, Kansas City has amazing transportation, and having been part of the Prospect Max process for as long as we went through, you all have a vaccination site right there in the old Gen X building, right there in the Linwood Shopping Center. And I know you have other places across town. Can you tell our listeners a little bit about that, what times they can go if they want to go get a vaccination, and where are the locations that they may be able to go and get vaccinated, sir?
Yeah, I mean, not everybody who has certain resources understands that for folks that either don't have cars or are working two or three jobs and are stressed out the max in other ways, it doesn't mean it's just automatic to get your vaccine. Most employers, maybe not all, but most employers will allow you time off to go get vaccinated. Some actually are now paying folks to get vaccinated. The opportunities, whether it's in, you know, the CVS's, the Hy-Vee's, et cetera, where you can, schedule an appointment and get vaccinated and get your groceries at the same time or whatever that you're needing. So there's a lot of convenience there. Our health department tries to have vaccination clinics someplace at least every other Saturday, and we have evening clinics on Tuesday and Thursday until about 7:15, and you can walk in, and folks are getting in and out in almost all cases in less than half an hour. So you can drop by right after work or school and get vaccinated, particularly on Tuesdays and Thursday evenings.
And also for those that you can call Truman Medical Center, they're 404-CARE, 404-CARE, and set up. Also, Swope Community Builders and Sam Rogers are also, for those that may live in those neighborhoods, they're right locally in that area where you live at, so you don't have to go a long way. And as I said, the Gen X building also, for those that can get to, everybody can get to Prospect in Kansas City, and the bus stop is right there. Get off, get back on, and get back to your location. And as Dr. Archer said, those places, Hy-Vee, you know, CVS, Walgreens, they're on every corner and in every community. There are places out there to get vaccinated. Dr. Archer, is there a charge to get vaccinated? Is anybody having to pay for this, or is it just free?
So it's in the general public interest for everybody to get vaccinated from this disease to reduce the spread of the disease. So the federal government, through taxes, are paying for the vaccine and the delivery systems in many places. So there is zero charge to any individual, regardless of their ability to pay, to get this vaccine. Now, if you have insurance, you can share that with some of the providers who then can bill the insurance company. There's no copay. You can't be billed a copay or anything, but it does allow the providers to recoup part of their costs. You know, Truman is an example. In our health department, we've not been reimbursed at a level to cover the actual staffing cost to give the vaccine. So it does help agencies if you have insurance, but in no way, shape, or form should you feel like you have to provide that. It's just convenient if you have the information.
Dr. Archer, so what is the current daily caseload for the metropolitan area for those who may be testing positive right now for COVID-19?
So the challenge is that we are no longer testing at the level that we should be. And we also have known from the beginning of this disease that much of the spread was occurring before people had symptoms at all, which is part of why this has been so challenging. So my answer to that, in a sense, is, to be honest, we don't know exactly how much is out there because we're not testing enough. We're running a positivity rate of somewhere between 3% and 5%, and what that means is that if 100 people are tested, somewhere between 3 and 5 are positive. But the problem is that we're not testing very many people that are asymptomatic or have mild disease. It's only a large percentage of those are ones that are seeking medical care and have symptoms that could be COVID-related, and the medical provider is testing those folks. I think the answer is that there's still a whole lot more of this disease out there than people realize, and we are actually now testing the wastewater, the sewage, and this virus is shed into the to the toilets, and we can actually look at community areas to get a sense of how much of a virus is there, and also which variant, which I think is particularly important. We're starting to see the so-called Brazilian or P1 variant, which part of the concern with that is, although the vaccines are just as good at preventing death and hospitalization, there does seem to be a larger number of people that break through with mild or asymptomatic disease. So we are a little worried that that's going to continue to spread in some of our communities.
Dr. Archer, if you've been fully vaccinated, and I'm going to cover what fully vaccinated is here in a second, do you still need to social distance, and should you wear a mask?
So it depends. And the reason I'm saying that is it depends on who else you're around, and what their vaccination status is, and or what their immune system is, even if they are vaccinated. So as an example, if you live with or visit somebody who has had a bone marrow or organ transplant, is on high levels of steroid for a medical condition or whatever, they may have even been vaccinated, but they don't necessarily, we're still, all the trials that were done were primarily done with people that have kind of the average medical conditions that many of us have, but not necessarily those that have had transplants or that. So there's still a large number of doctors that are working to see, well, which of these other conditions do people mount good immune responses to and which don't they? So it's a prudent thing to do to still protect those that are vulnerable from that standpoint. So I guess that's my answer. If you're in doubt and you want to wear a mask both to protect yourself from a slight infection that might then pass to somebody that would have worse infection, you're certainly able to do it. I would encourage folks to support anybody that still wants to wear a mask in various settings. They're not required anymore, but there are a lot of things that we don't require. I don't think we've got anything on the books that says you can't jump out of a second-story window, but that doesn't mean it's a good idea.
Dr. Archer, what is meant by the term fully vaccinated?
So fully vaccinated would be 2 weeks after the last required dose for that vaccine. So there's a few vaccines, the J&J, where only one dose is required. So 2 weeks after that, the body has built a large percentage of its immune response. With the Pfizer Moderna, it's 2 weeks after that second shot that you're considered fully vaccinated. The one caveat I'll say, though, is that for folks that have immune challenges or problems, they may not get, quote, fully vaccinated after that second shot. We're now looking at, do they need a third shot, a booster shot? At what point will immunity wane on this? For the flu shots, we recommend, and I've got mine since I was 17, so yeah, 50 years now, I've gotten the flu shot every year. It's important, and I would not be surprised if we have an annual COVID shot also now to keep people's immunity strong and also to protect against any variations or mutations that may occur that year.
I know that was one of the questions I asked. I got the Moderna shot when I took it at the VA, and I asked them that question. I said, is this going to become like the flu shot? And she said, yes, it's most likely going to become like the flu shot, where every year you have to get a booster shot. So, Dr. Archer, why does it take two doses to be fully vaccinated?
So, the way our bodies are designed, sometimes one challenge isn't enough, and a second one builds on the first one. So it's a little bit like, weightlifting or whatever else. If you lift, only periodically or once, you may get a little benefit from that. But if you follow up, after you've gotten most of the benefit from that first lifting with the second lifting, you can build from there. So we've known this for years with childhood immunizations. That's why some of the childhood immunizations, you can't just get one. and some things like measles or that, we not only have to have that first one, but then you need a second one a little bit later in life. So tetanus is a good example where immunity can wane from that, and you need a booster at some point to keep yourself fully protected. So the body's ability to fight off a foreign agent can drop off over time, but also it's strengthened by that second challenge or third challenge with some vaccines.
Dr. Archer, many people are saying, well, you've been vaccinated, so I don't need to get vaccinated. Can you expose the myth behind that statement?
So, yes, I have been fully vaccinated. But particularly the Brazilian P1 variant has an increased chance that I could become infected. Most of those cases, I wouldn't even know I had the virus, but I could pass it on to you. And if you're not vaccinated, then you're very vulnerable. And even if you're lucky enough to have a strong immune system or not have severe illness or maybe not even know that you were infected, you could still spread it to other folks. So there's no question that the more people that get vaccinated, the more we can return to a lot of the normal things and activities that we have traditionally done. And there are a lot of events that I think are starting to be planned where they may actually only allow folks that are vaccinated to participate, and or they will, allow folks that are vaccinated to sit in the normal kind of a seating arrangement, and the unvaccinated would have to be spread out and not as many seats. I've even heard some folks that might say, well, we'll charge twice the ticket price for an unvaccinated person because we can only fill that area at half capacity.
And for those that are, we're all Chiefs fans and we all love our Chiefs, that they're looking at full capacity when we open the season back up to let's try to run it back again. So that may be an inducement for a lot of people to get, if you want to have 70,000 people, you want to enjoy your tailgating, you want to enjoy the things that you enjoy connected with football season, home parties, folks, that's a very powerful motivator to be able to come out, be at the stadium. So that's some things that people may want to look at.
Yeah, well, the other thing is, even those that aren't going to differentiate on vaccine status, if enough folks don't get vaccinated, then this virus can hang on. It can mutate into something that maybe the vaccines don't work as well with, and then we've got to get a new vaccine produced. So we could still lose full attendance at Arrowhead this fall at some point if this disease raises its head again because enough people haven't got vaccinated. Now, there's no magic cutoff because people have asked me, well, do we need to get to 60 or 70 or 80% of folks vaccinated to have what is sometimes called herd immunity? I prefer the term community or population immunity, where it's kind of like a nuclear reactor. You have all those lead rods in there to keep it from exploding or melting down. Everybody that gets vaccinated can slow down the rate of transmission to where it's easier for us to put out the fires with our contact tracing and other mechanisms. It's everybody, I request, think very seriously about, even if you're not worried about getting vaccinated, get vaccinated just so you're less likely to spread this disease to others and not even know it.
That is correct. We're going to take a short break. You're listening to 90.1 FM, KKFI. This is Cowtown Conversations, and I'm your host, Joseph Jackson. And today we're talking with Dr. Rex Archer, Director of the Kansas City Public Health Department. Stay tuned right back after this short break. We're back. This is Joseph Jackson, hosting Cowtown Conversations on 90.1 FM. And our guest today is Dr. Rex Archer, Director of the Kansas City, Missouri Health Department. Dr. Archer, you want to go back to, well, let's... We're looking at opening up schools, and many people right now may not know that KCPS, Kansas City Public Schools, has a couple of schools that where they're having quarantine because the outbreak is so severe. Why not wait until after summer, be able to get children vaccinated, when a lot of the districts are pushing to get rid of the mask mandate and everything else, and the children aren't vaccinated? We had a term when I was on the school board, is it in the best interest of the children? And does it, what it sounds like adults are fighting for now, in the best interest of our children?
I'm chuckling because this is an issue of weighing off the relative risks and the benefits of different approaches. So we know that virtual learning varies in different populations on how effective it is, what internet speed do they have, are their parents available to almost become substitute teachers while they're at home. There are a lot of issues. Are they food insecure, and can we get meals to them where they were getting those at school as a way to have the right nutrition to be able to learn, et cetera? So there are balances of risk. The under 12-year-olds, there is no vaccine for right now. So the grade school kids, we don't have that level of protection. Now, the past variants that have been spreading have usually, and I say usually, not been so explosive in those grade schools that we've had this level of transmission. We do have a few schools that have had high rates of kids off, either because of quarantine and or illness. One of the challenges that we have is that because kids have not been going to school, all of the other kinds of colds and viruses and things that kids are normally exposed to, they haven't had exposure to. And in fact, I think we're going to be finding that as the masks come off for adults, a lot of adults are going to be experiencing a lot more mild viral infections that aren't COVID, but they haven't been exposed to because of the masks and the other mechanisms. So it is complicated. We have kids who have not been progressing like they should in education, virtual alone, and so I think the school systems have tried to find ways to get those kids back in and be able to effectively learn, because there are a lot of negative health outcomes if kids are falling behind on their education. I'm not sure I'm fully answering that question, but for the schools, for high school as well as middle school, yes, we need to get all those kids vaccinated that are now eligible to be vaccinated. And if we did, we shouldn't be having a problem of closing down middle schools or high schools.
No, you're answering the question is that, folks, we need to look at staying the course right now, getting our kids vaccinated, and then letting them go back and open up in schools, because then your child protects my child and my child protects your child, and they both protect the teacher, so that learning has been disrupted during the pandemic can begin to occur naturally back at the rate it was before the pandemic?
Well, the neat thing right now is that with rare exceptions of teachers that have certain medical conditions where they may not get full immune response, there isn't any teacher who can't be fully vaccinated basically now and does not have to worry about exposure from the kids to them. They still need to be good role models. And in that case, if you're going to have the kids still wearing masks, which they should, CDC supports that as well as our health department. In fact, all the health departments in the Kansas City metro area believe that the kids in school still absolutely need to be wearing masks. And if the teachers aren't wearing masks, even if they're fully vaccinated, kids like to do what they see us do more than what we tell them to do. So I think the teachers are prudent in still wearing the mask in front of the kids just to be good role models.
So, Dr. Archer, there's a lot of vaccine hesitancy. What is meant by the term vaccine hesitancy?
So, folks don't get vaccinated for a lot of different reasons. They may be, quote, hesitant to get vaccinated because they think it's going to cost them something. And so we talked about that earlier today. They think that there are side effects that aren't worth the risk of getting vaccinated. Those are myths. Yes, there are rare times when somebody may have a reaction to a vaccine, but compared to the hospitalization and death rates, we've had three folks in their 30s that died here in Kansas City from this virus. We haven't had anybody die because of the vaccine in the city. So, when you have a risk of almost 600 deaths that we know of, and remember that there are a lot more COVID deaths out there than our numbers say because people have died without getting tested. There are people that have died at home that were not tested for COVID, and so the numbers are even worse than people may realize.
And I will say this, when I got it the first 3 or 4 days, I'm like, oh, this is not that bad. It's not what everybody thinks it is. Folks, after day 5 through day, because I stayed in the house for like 20 days, day 5 through day 15, it knocked me on my hind side, and I just sit there and I'm, but I knew I had friends and family came by. I would tell them leave stuff. I had a little bucket on the porch. I'd tell them leave it on the porch. And then when they leave, I open up the door and wave, and I could see them get back to their car. You can get through this. You can survive this. And a lot of people may be hesitant, but I will say this. I wouldn't want anybody to go through what I went through those last days. And there's a young man, his dad got it the same time I did. I've known him since he was 4 and he graduates this year. His dad didn't survive COVID. So now he's 18 years old. And just at the time when he really needs his dad, he doesn't have his dad. I know the individual who died last March at the VA through neighborhood meetings. Folks, if you don't feel well, go to the doctor, go to the hospital, go to the clinic. But I'm going to say this, a prevention of not doing that is getting the COVID vaccination. I have another friend of mine who got COVID. He is on oxygen right now because he's still dealing with the health risk of that. All this can be eliminated, folks, by one shot. You protect yourself, your children.
You're absolutely correct that there is a wide variation of people's response to the vaccine. There are literally a large number of folks, probably close to half, that really have nothing other than, yeah, they felt the pinprick when they got the shot, might have a slight sore arm, and that's it. Now, there are a percentage of folks, and I do recommend when you get the vaccine that try to schedule it at a time that when you get the booster that you have a lighter day the next day or two. Part of it, being vaccinated challenges the body, kind of like working out, lifting weights, or running, you know, a long distance race, and that's further than you normally run. And the body does get fatigued as it is gearing up to protect you against this virus should you get exposed to the actual real virus. And I think that's one of the hesitancies. People don't understand that the vaccine is not the virus. It's not a weakened virus. You cannot get the disease from the vaccine. But what it does is it gets your body to kind of pre-prepare for what's going to happen. So, you know, it's kind of like studying for an exam. You're better off studying for an exam than just taking it cold, and that's what the vaccine does. Now, for some communities, I think it's particularly important to talk about how these trials went forward, and that the process of approval was faster than for many vaccines. But the reason was because the companies that produced the vaccine were willing to start the next phase before the previous phase was completed. If the previous phase had not been successful, they would have wasted all that time and money and energy of already moving to the next phase. But they decided that in the interest of public health and saving lives, they did the corporate responsible thing of going ahead, and once it looked like their phase was going to be successful, they launched the next phase. If that first phase had not been successful, then they would have had to start over, and they would have wasted that. So that's why sometimes the trials take a lot longer, is because it's not as urgent to move these things forward. And the last thing I want to mention is that we cannot forget that government has let people down at times in the past. And let them down is kind of a euphemism for just plain not done what they should have done. So folks that are familiar with Tuskegee and the situation where, you know, 300 or so folks that had syphilis were denied effective treatment because they wanted to, quote, study the disease. You know, that would never pass any ethics committee or review now. Shouldn't have happened then. But the real damage from that has been the breaking of trust for folks. But if you choose to not get vaccinated, then you are doing what the federal government did to those Tuskegee folks. You are denying yourself an effective prevention and treatment for you and your loved ones. And so don't get trapped into the mistrust of the past and end up doing that to yourself.
We've got a caller on line two. Once, caller, can you tell us your name and what part of town you're calling from, what your comment or question is about the mask situation?
Yes, my name is Fran, and I am a business owner in Midtown Kansas City. And I did want to kind of break away and go back to the mask wearing topic and make a statement that while the masks are no longer mandated in most municipalities or states, they are strongly recommended by most municipalities and required in a lot of retail establishments and continue to be required in all medical facilities. So it's important for people to have a mask in their pocket or their purse if they don't want to wear it on the ongoing, even if they're fully vaccinated. Most places aren't going to ask you to prove that you're vaccinated. We're just going to ask you to please wear a mask. We're close to the finish line, hopefully, on this thing, but we kind of need to continue to toe this line to protect others and allow everyone who wants to be vaccinated the opportunity to do so and protect those that will not be able to be vaccinated moving forward until this thing is completely behind us. There are a lot of benefits to wearing masks. Just across the board, and it's important for people to know that they still will be required in a lot of places.
Thank you, Fran.
So, go ahead.
I just want to reinforce that comment that businesses are allowed to require people to wear shoes or shirts or to not do certain things in their establishment, and wearing of masks to protect their own employees that maybe haven't been vaccinated yet or can't get full immune protection from vaccination, as well as their customers. And there are still folks who, even those that are vaccinated, that are a little hesitant to go into certain places where people aren't wearing masks. So, yes, I ask people to be supportive of, you know, take your mask along with you. You don't really know, again, if you're being asked to wear one, please do so. It makes a difference.
Dr. Archer, some people say that the vaccine was created too quickly. Can you explain just a little bit of the science behind that, how they were able to create the COVID vaccine so quickly?
So I addressed it a little bit before, that there are a number of phases to vaccine development. And in the normal processes, companies would not move to the next phase until they had completed the previous phase. So as you can imagine, it takes a lot longer if you've got, you know, let's take the alphabet, so the 26 letters. If you have to complete each letter before you go to the next letter, you can see that that takes quite a bit of time, particularly if each of those phases takes a few weeks or months. If you decide that, well, we're going to risk the fact that we may waste it by, we're going to start section E, F, G, and H early on section B or C, then you can speed that time frame up quite a bit. The other thing is that the research that's been done, particularly on the mRNA types of viruses and vaccines, that's been building for quite a while. And we actually, back after the anthrax attacks and the various risks that we've had of pandemics for influenza, we've realized that we needed technology and mechanisms to produce vaccines more rapidly, not just the development and approval, but also the mass production. When you had to do it in eggs, it takes longer to actually produce the vaccine than with these other technological advantages. So I think that's basically the issue is, you know, you can do, in our quality improvement circles, we used to talk about, you know, you can improve quality through time or money. And in this case, more money was spent to keep the quality of the process up, but reduce the time.
Want to quickly repeat, Dr. Archer. So what ages can be vaccinated now?
So ages 12 and up can be vaccinated now. The good news is we have over 3 out of 4 of our folks over 65 that are vaccinated. The bad news is that 1 out of 4 of those folks isn't yet vaccinated, and they're at high risk for death and hospitalization. So we still need to do better than 3 out of 4, but that's 75% for those folks. For younger age kids, the opportunity just has opened up. So we don't have, you know, we've maybe done 100 or so of the kids 12 to 15 right now, and but we're gearing up for that. So everybody above age 12 can be and should be vaccinated.
So as we close out, Dr. Archer, after almost 25 years of service to the city, you recently announced your retirement as director of the Kansas City, Missouri Public Health Department. Are you sad to go? And also, what are your plans for retirement?
Yeah, this is bittersweet. You know, the folks that I work with, the great staff we have, the media that's been so responsive to getting things out and covering stuff, that part I'm going to really, really miss. But my other passion in public health has been teaching and mentoring and leadership development. So, yeah, I'm in negotiation with 4 different universities right now in regards to kind of a halftime position right before COVID hit. I was actually starting to work on a book on leadership and advocacy in public health, and that got put on the shelf during COVID, but I want to take that back down and work with that, because there really is nothing, in my opinion, more important than protecting the public's health, because, you know, you can't have productivity with businesses, you can't enjoy arts and entertainment. You know, none of the things that we value can occur if we're not protecting people's health. So I'm looking forward at that kind of new stage. I've also got grandkids, and my schedule's just been so crazy the last 5 years in particular that I haven't, you know, I've lost vacation time and I haven't done the traveling that my wife and I would like to do. We love the national parks, and we want to be able to get out a little bit more and see some of those that we haven't seen and go back to some that we really love, like Yosemite.
Well, thank you so much, Dr. Archer, and much success and happiness in your retirement. We never end Cowtown Conversations without our community minute. If you need access to the vaccine, please call the health department at 816-513-6008. Jackson County has mailed out the 2021 property tax assessments that are coming in the mail now. If you receive an envelope from Jackson County, make sure you open it, and we'll tell you how much you can look at your property taxes going up or down on your home. So, and there's a short turnaround, folks, so definitely tune it, open it up quick. The Land Bank Board of Advisors will be having their next Land Bank information session on Saturday, May 22nd via Zoom. To register, go to Land Bank Board of Advisors at kceventbrite.com. It sees expectations. We'll be having a free writing and financial literary webinar on 5/19 from 7 to 8. And for adults, will be on 5/22 from 10 to 11:30. To sign up, go to letsucceeds.org/seminars and events. For Cowtown Conversations, I've been your host, Joseph Jackson. Join us next week as we do part 2 of Downsizing with Cindy Murphy of Downsizing Simplified. Have a great day, stay safe, wear a mask, and stay tuned for My Place with Larry J.